can as the ultimate warrior. Accept no less. Give no less to the warriors. You ravishing Rick Rude will feel that pain, feel that power at SummerSlam as the warriors claw and scratch all over the back of the ultimate warrior and tell me to do what is rightfully right and wrongfully wrong. Take the Intercontinental belt back. Take it back to parts unknown. Load the spaceship with the rocket fuel. Load it with the warriors, because after SummerSlam, the belt will be mine. All the money in the world can't buy what it takes to be a champion. Dollars do not buy desire. So that the power of the ultimate warrior shall live.
Welcome, everyone, to the Inside Pulse, htcwrestling.com, Wrestling's Pulsecast. I'm your host, Matthew Herrick. And I don't know what to say. I mean, we came in, started off this past weekend, and we thought we were coming in off of a fantastic WrestleMania and an awesome Raw, where it seemed like WWE had everything going the right way. And then we get the untimely passing of the Ultimate Warrior. Just hours, not even a full day, hours after he appeared on Monday Night Raw. Still a little surreal to me. I know there's a lot of different things running through my head as far as how I don't know, I don't want to call it conspiracies, but how I think that maybe this was something that Warrior, aka Jim Hellwig, knew before going into this weekend that might happen, if it was a pre-existing medical condition. But one way or another, it was and is a sad time, whether or not you were a Warrior fan or not. I posted on our website that I was never a big fan of the Ultimate Warrior, but there's no doubt that he had a huge impact on the sport that we all love. He was a trendsetter as far as many, many different things. And he was only 54. That's young in today's day and age. And I look at my father, who is 65, just turned 65 last month, and I mean, he's gone through a quadruple bypass surgery, survived it, and is able to hang around and be with his grandkids when now Warrior can't even be with his own kids or his wife. And it's a really sad moment this week and a really rough one to get through. That being said, I'm joined this week with Justin Kim of htcwrestling.com. We were going to be joined by Rob Schamberger, who actually painted the Ultimate Warriors that he wore on Monday Night Raw, but it's still a little too raw for him to discuss openly. So we talked about it this afternoon, and he's going to come on a future show fairly soon to talk about his experience at WrestleMania and everything that's happened since then and meeting all these guys. But yeah, before we get into WrestleMania or the Hall of Fame or Raw or anything you want to talk about, let me just throw it over to you guys. I'll throw it over to you, Justin, first, and just your reactions coming out of this week and what the wrestling world seems to be all trying to cope with right now.
It definitely came as a shock. I know you're looking back and you're seeing, reading things now, people talking about how it kind of didn't look the greatest during WrestleMania week, and when now, you know, the circumstances that have happened and his untimely death, you look back and you say maybe, you know, something was up, like you said, Ben. He was walking to the ring very gingerly on Raw on Monday. Seems like a couple times he was kind of holding towards his chest, something might have been wrong. And even when he was shaking the ropes and giving his promo, things still, when you look back at it now, kind of just look a little bit off. I haven't seen all of this Hall of Fame speech yet. I've only seen, you know, what was on the USA show the after Raw immediately, so I don't really know what he was like during then. But, yeah, I completely agree with you, man. It's really tough. I mean, there's two sides that I like to consider myself a wrestling fan. The writer that I am now, who talks about the technical aspects of wrestling and everything that goes into putting out a good wrestling match, and obviously, you know, the Ultimate Warrior is never the greatest wrestler. But when there's a second side of me that's the, you know, the kid, the wrestling fan that's been watching wrestling ever since he's been 3 years old, and the Ultimate Warrior is basically 1B to the guy, to one of my favorite wrestlers from when I was a kid, when you look at Hulk Hogan. I was only like 2 years old when WrestleMania 6 happened, so I couldn't really get into that as far as picking or choosing his side. But, you know, like I said earlier this week, he's one of the most iconic figures from, like, people our age's childhood. As far as if you were a wrestling fan, you had Hulk Hogan and you had the Ultimate Warrior. Those were the two guys growing up to like. And, you know, like I said, everybody was just kind of taken aback by what had happened. And everybody saw him at the Hall of Fame and saw him at, you know, Raw. And everybody was kind of feel like a little kid again, watching him, like they were just watching him grow up. I mean, he may not have been the best wrestler in the world, but you can't deny that he looked like he had a passion for everything that he did, and he actually legitimately loved going out there every single time he was out there and performing and doing everything. I mean, he's got his entrances is one of the ones you always remember, you know, the face paint, the tassels, always very colorful, always very bright, later on in his life, did he, you know, maybe say some things that, you know, politically, whatever you want to talk about is wrong, sure, but I'm more concerned about the man, the character, and the guy that has, you know, a wife and two kids that he seemed very, very appreciative and loving of during his Hall of Fame speech. I mean, kind of similar to you, Matt, I just had my father, who's around the same age, I think he's just a couple years older than the Ultimate Warrior, and he had a stroke a few months ago, and he's living to survive it, and growing up and all that stuff. So yeah, it's definitely one of those young age things that you have to think about, and you just say it's definitely too damn young for somebody to pass away. And I've said this earlier to somebody else, but it almost seems like, you know, the Ultimate Warrior's life, if it was a movie, it had the perfect storybook ending where he had, you know, his life, he had the rise to the top, then he had the middle part where it was this kind of, you know, rocky relationships, everybody, and then he finally, you know, at the very end, makes good with pretty much everybody in his life, and he gets inducted to the Hall of Fame, and he gets recognized on Raw, and he has one more, his life ends with one more time in the spotlight, and making amends with everybody that he needs to make amends with, and then he just kind of, you know, unfortunately, you know, passed away. It's one of those things where you always hear about family members waiting for, you know, all of their family to get there, holding on before they, you know, before they pass away. I mean, I can remember when my grandma passed away when I was, I believe, like, really young. I think I was like, in the first grade, and obviously that really wasn't there at the time, but my mom says that she held off until my uncle got there at the last minute, and then she pretty much passed away almost minutes after that. So maybe it was one of those things where, kind of like you said, Matt, maybe Warrior knew something was wrong and he held off as long as possible to make amends, to make everything right in his life and get one final chance to be in the spotlight before he passed away. So it's definitely, like you said, it's a tough time where we all thought we were ready to talk about how good WWE looks nowadays and what's definitely coming towards the future. And now we just have this kind of, you know, got hit by a bus, and now we're just kind of stuck emotionally and don't really know what to go with from here on out. So it's definitely, I agree, it's definitely a tough time as a wrestling fan, whether you like Ultimate Warrior or hate him. There's no doubt that if you're our age, he was part of our childhood, and it's one of those things where you feel like a little part of your childhood passed away when you saw what happened with the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, and I was going to add that it obviously harkens back to when Macho Man passed away, but this, I mean, even though I was probably more of a fan of the Macho Man than I was the Ultimate Warrior character, Macho had been out of the limelight for so long that it was surreal, but it was something that, I don't know, I wouldn't say expected, but because he was out of the limelight for so long and he wasn't making amends and he wasn't going around and he wasn't talking to you. It wasn't like he was in the spotlight. So when he passed away, you were able to distance yourself from it compared to this where, I mean, everything seemed to line up in the last, it was like 12 to 18 months. Like, you saw him sign up for the video game and sign on for that with his likeness. And then after that, it was the DVD that ironically I watched and watched last week and posted the review this week, and I couldn't think of any other bittersweet timing than that was. And then you have the Hall of Fame, and then at the Hall of Fame, him signing a Legends deal with the WWE and coming out one more time on Raw, and then he's gone. It seemed extremely succinct to me, I don't like to speculate on things like this, but it seemed very, very neat and tidy as far as him getting affairs in order for his family. Cam, I'm sure you have stuff you want to add.
Yeah, I agree pretty much with what you said. I think that because we saw Warrior, like, on television for 3 consecutive days, I think it really kind of hit home. I wasn't the hugest fan, but, you know, I watched WrestleMania 6, and when he beat Hulk Hogan, it's one of those moments that you'll always remember, you know, as a kid, as a wrestling fan, or, you know, sports fan in general, those moments in your life. He obviously did something for the business if he can be gone for, as he said, 18 or, you know, however long it was, 18 years, I can't remember exactly the number, and still headline a Hall of Fame class, so, you know, speaks volumes. Like you said, I'm not going to really speculate. I think it's kind of weird how life does work like that. And I guess, I mean, I really, at least he got his chance to, I guess, get peace with the fans and with, you know, all the guys in the back and with Vince, and seeing that picture with him and Hogan and Vince kind of, you know, even though I've never met, I met Hulk Hogan, but you know those guys personally, it really hits home to be like, wow, like, you know, one of these guys is gone. So it's really just a weird way to end a WrestleMania season.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Here I was thinking that once we got through Monday night, we'd all be able to take a breath and relax a little bit. I figured I might be on this show. I might not be, you know, this week's show, I mean, and I might not be. I wasn't sure. Obviously, with how WrestleMania played out, I wanted to be on the show, considering how great the show was. But I know I'm utterly burnt out from everything WrestleMania in the last 2 months. But yeah, it was just, and I don't want to make this seem like it's this horrible, tragic thing that just puts a black cloud over everything that happened this week, because it wasn't. I mean, it's tragic that he passed away, but if there was a way to go out, I mean, he did it. And he did pretty much everything that you would think a man would want to accomplish before he passed away, especially with the way he lived his life and his career and all the rumors and back talk and politics and everything else. He was able to make amends. And whether or not it was divine intervention or it was something that was just a freak of nature, a freak of the human body, he lasted long enough to really make one final impact on not only fans, but his contemporaries, as well as the people who grew up watching him that now take his place in the ring. And there's a lot to be said for that. I don't really consider his death as being a black cloud over the weekend. It's not a fun one, but it's something that should be, hey, I said this before, I'm pretty much full-blooded Irish. When we have wakes or funerals, they're parties, they're celebration of life. They're not a mourning of a death. So I can only take this as a celebration of a man's life. And it's unfortunate the people he had to leave behind, but like I said, he did it pretty much the best way he possibly could have. And I don't know. There's really not much more to say about that. Do either of you guys have anything else to add, or do you want to move on to WrestleMania and try to get back into the swing of things?
I'm okay with moving on.
Yeah, no, I have nothing else to say, too. So if I go into what I would want to say about Nancy Grace and Colin Howard, it would just be put a negative on everything that's going on right now. So, yeah, I think it's best to move on.
Yeah, I'd rather not talk about her or anything that relates to past that. It's just not worth my breath. So, yeah, moving on. Let's move on to the Hall of Fame. I know, Justin, you said you haven't watched all of it. I haven't watched all of it. ironically, I saw everyone but Ultimate Warrior because I had to go to sleep and get up the next day. Mr. T and his mama went on for a very, very long time. And but all in all, from what I saw, the Hall of Fame was great. And I named this class a long time ago. I think when Jake and Warrior were just in, and then Scott Hall appeared out of nowhere, and I think I named it before Scott Hall came in as the Redemption class. And that was kind of the theme of the night. It really was all of these men who had been down on their luck or down by their own choice or had been dealt a bad hand in life and overcoming it and being able to be men that they wanted to be and be the people they wanted to be and were able to get their lives back on track. And it was a real pleasure to see them look and act as good as they did. Jake Roberts' induction speech was incredible. I would highly suggest anybody who saw that to go back and, if you haven't seen it, watch it. If you have seen it, rewatch it. It's phenomenal. Scott Hall's was another one that was very good but very business-oriented. I don't know if that was a conscious part or because he was inducted as Razor Ramon or if it was just time constraints. Who knows? One way or another, it still was a very good speech, and he looked fantastic. That was the best I've seen Scott Hall look in a good probably 5 to 10 years, and he looked excellent. Carlos Colon, I think, was upstaged a little bit by Carlito, going to happen when you have somebody like Carlito as your son. Lita went on a little too long and rambled a little too much about her career, but it was fun. It just kind of put a time constraint on everybody else. Mr. T, no idea where he was going with his speech, but hey, it's Mr. T. When has anybody really understood what T's been talking about? Hell, the person who introduced him was T. Jr., his son, and he was labeled as T. Jr. So I don't know if that's his real first name or his real name or what's going on, but that was interesting to say the least. Kane interrupting him and cutting him off and having to go into the Paul Bearer induction was fun. And the Undertaker tribute at the end was spot on. I mean, that's the guy that never shows up at the Hall of Fame, just never does. I mean, granted, he came out in full gimmick and everything, but he came out, raised the urn, and they went to black. I mean, that's all they really needed. Glenn Jacobs, who plays Kane, did a fantastic job inducting Paul Bearer into the Hall of Fame. He told some great stories. He mentioned how if there was no Paul Bearer, there would be no Kane. And he's exactly right. I mean, everything he said was very poignant and right on point for William Moody, who is Paul Bearer and one of the greatest managers I think the business has ever seen. Justin, you said you caught some highlights of the show. Cam, did you see the whole one on the network yet?
Yeah, I sat through the whole Hall of Fame. I was pretty excited because this is the first time it was actually live, so I mean I was pretty excited, especially being a real big fan of Jake the Snake. I wanted to see his. I think you covered it. He did it very. I think it was the speech of the night easily. I think probably the best speech I've seen since Shawn Michaels. Mr. T was getting a whole lot of crap on the internet, but I think it was very touching to him to hear. I mean his story. I mean he did ramble way too long. But it was touching to hear his real appreciation for his mother. I think it was a very good overall. I think it was a pretty good show. And I mean, the guys do ramble. I mean, every year they're gonna ramble. But I mean, it's their time to shine. I mean, if you watch the Football Hall of Fame, it's way worse. So.
Yeah, Football Hall of Fame. There's a lot less storytelling and a lot more just thanking people and all that fun stuff. But no, like you said, Jake. Easily had the speech of the night. I think I haven't seen the Warriors yet, but Jake was the one that I was looking forward to. Jake was the one that I really wanted to see, and I think he came across terrifically, especially considering that was the first time he was on WWE TV since Old School Raw, and he looks even better now than he did when he was at Old School Raw. And I mean, this is a guy who's been through hell, and he somehow came out on top. And you cannot thank, I don't think him or Scott Hall can thank Diamond Dallas Page anymore. I don't think they should ever stop thanking Diamond Dallas Page. He's done, I mean, essentially it comes down to the performer and what they're willing to do and the man and what they're willing to put up with. But Diamond Dallas, like Jake said, he is just one irritatingly positive son of a bitch. And when you have somebody like that in your face 24/7, eventually it starts to rub off on you. And it worked. It worked well, and it worked. It worked for Jake. It worked for Scott. So, honestly, I would want to see a Diamond Dallas Page Hall of Fame induction, just for his work with other guys beyond just the WWE wellness policy. He has been instrumental in legends legacies, and that's a big statement for a guy who really didn't have to do any of it, and he went out of his way to contact Jake and to get Scott involved and to get them back on the right track. And that's a pretty amazing human being when you're able to put yourself out there and get these guys to realize what they're doing to themselves, and then also help them get their lives back on track. Justin, of what you did see of the show, I know you said you watched the recap one after Raw. What did you think?
Pretty much just the same thing you guys said. I mean, one of my friends who watched it basically just echoed everything you said, how Jake Roberts' speech was probably the best one of the night, and from what I've seen of it so far is that I would tend to agree with that. Not really too much else to add. I mean, I know people were complaining about Lita rambling on long, and it's probably what kind of set everybody else up, and, you know, after that to be kind of cut. You know, her and Mr. T probably forced a little bit everybody else to get cut going back there. So, I agree with what you guys said, what you said, how it was kind of like the redemption class, if you want to call it that. I actually really thought that DDP might even end up going in this year with Jake and Scott Hall. I think, I thought even they'd come out and like, they would have done something where they let Jake go and they let Razor go, and then they had them both stay out there to induct DDP later on after they announced the class. But I agree. I think his WCW stature alone, I mean, he wasn't a big, big player for that company, but I think he did enough for everybody that, in that company to warrant a Hall of Fame induction there. So I would like to see him go out one day bad, and just basically, like you said, for everything he's done with Jake and Scott Hall. So it's nice to see all those guys who have had, you know, troubles in the past, including the Warrior, including Lita, get their due finally in the Hall of Fame.
Say from the Warrior speech, especially now that he's passed, I think that he mentioned that they should add a wing in the Hall of Fame to the guys that work like the road crew and the people that just the behind the scene type dudes. I think that we should really, really consider that now, because I think that'd be a cool thing for the fans to see some behind the scene type stuff, and it would be a nice tribute to the Ultimate Warrior since he suggested it.
Yeah, I mean, even we haven't even seen a referee be inducted. I mean, obviously, I think the logical choice would be either Earl or Dave Hebner, but Earl's working for TNA right now. And they kind of parted on pretty bad terms with WWE, but, I mean, Mike Chioda, we haven't seen any other referees be inducted. There's numerous guys that I worked with in production that could be inducted. I mean, before Big Dom Gubrick, who is now the head of talent relations in TNA, with my boss when I worked there, he was the one that was the head of Tough Enough, the original Tough Enough. If you remember, see the big guy with the big ginger in sitting in on all the decision making. He was another guy who seemed to be like he was a lifer, and he was a guy. He was an idea guy, and he was another guy who probably would warrant enough to be put into a Hall of Fame. It's just that the way the WWE culture works, and it's the same culture as the company I work for now, the overreaching company I work for now, not the specific branch I work for, is that if you have an idea or if you do something, it's the idea itself is more like the company's idea than it is your idea. So that's why I think it would be a little hard for them to pinpoint certain things. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if there is one person you want to see behind the scenes that I think should get inducted, even if they didn't have a ring like that, would be Jim Johnston, the guy who's been doing their music now. I don't know if he still does it, but he did all of their music in the early, 90s, 2000s, all that stuff. He should definitely get inducted, I think, one day, whether there's a wing or not.
Yeah, I actually just did the posted a review, a couple weeks ago. They released the Sounds of WWE. It was pretty much the countdown show that we did, all the best theme music, and it was Jim Johnston talking about how he came up with some of them and how different they sounded, or at, like, for some guys, Vince just basically gave them, okay, here's what the character is going to be, and come up with his entrance music. It's like, all right, then, let's see what we can do. The one thing I'm debating whether or not to say this. What the hell, they're never going to hire me again. I would say a good amount of other people did or do not get along with Jim Johnston. He's got his own wing by himself at the production studio, which nobody is allowed into, really. But there's no denying his talent, and there's no denying the fact that he is able to capture a lot of superstars' theme music. And you're right, he was an integral part of a lot of them. He is the one that came up with the glass breaking for Austin. He was the one that, put some of these things together. Obviously he didn't do Hulk Hogan's music. That was Behringer and Jimmy Hart, which, to his credit, Jim Johnston, anytime one of Jimmy Hart's songs did come up in their top, I think they did a top 20. Anytime one of Jimmy Hart's songs came up, he gave full credit to Jimmy. And what it meant and why it worked, and that's what the interesting part about the DVD was. And if you're looking or wondering what DVD I'm talking about, you could buy it at any like Walmart, Target, whatever, for about $5. It's that cheap. It's a good I think 45 to an hour long. It's a countdown show, but it gives you an insight of how Jim Johnston comes up with the music that really kicks off a superstar's career, and how he's able to work with other bands. And I think the first shots were with him and Josie Scott of Saliva working on Batista's theme music. So it was an interesting look behind the scenes and a look into the music studio part of the WWE, and it's a spot that's not really focused on very often, and one that I know we appreciate a lot because we've done a couple shows on it. I mean, I did an article on it as well, but and I'm looking at half of the music still listed in our studio, just of ones that I can queue up right now, but. But yeah, that was an interesting look into it. I could see him be inducted into the Hall of Fame. But again, he's another name that could be put in there. Kevin Dunn, the guy who's been pretty much running WWE television for the past 20, 25 years, maybe even 30 years now. But him and Vince McMahon are right there next to each other. The one thing I think that's holding him back is not wanting to induct someone who's not a performer until Vince is inducted. And I don't see that happening until Vince passes away, unfortunately. I don't think he'll allow it to happen. I know they've discussed it numerous times before, but I don't think it you'll see something like that happen until they want to get Vince in. But it's interesting. Like you said, there are a lot of people that go into making the WWE and building what the WWE is, and you don't get to see them, and you don't get to see the random producers or the random APs or the random production assistants or lighting guy or sound technician or anybody that goes into making what Raw, SmackDown, and WrestleMania is. There's a lot of men and women that put forth a lot of sweat into these shows and into this company. And, yeah, they should get the recognition they deserve. I think a good place to start would be the referees, some of the long-term referees, and maybe start working their way around it. It's just I think it's hard on them as WWE, I mean, because they're not names. They're not ones people are particularly interested into listening, except an award. So who knows? Hopefully it will happen sooner than later. But right now it's pretty much a focus on the big stars, on whoever they can get in this year. That's the big thing. It's like, who is it going to be this year? Who's going to be the big name from the past to show up this year? Next year they're already saying Sting. And he hasn't even stepped into a WWE ring yet, ever. And you can even include guys like us. Warrior was very kind to the jobbers that he worked with in the 1980s and early 90s. Guys like Barry Horowitz, Brooklyn Brawler, Jim Powers, all those guys. He was very complimentary about them and saying how the Warrior gimmick and a lot of other guys' gimmicks would not come across as being superstars or really a superhero type of person if it wasn't for those hands and those guys who would go out, basically just take bumps, lose, and then collect a paycheck. And then WWE would move on to a new city. Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Randy Savage, anybody you could think of, Big Boss Man, anybody from that era, Mr. Perfect, they all wrestled jobbers. You don't see it anymore. And it's the jobbers now are guys that are also technically on the roster as just regular WWE superstars. They're the JTG. They're the Heath Slaters and the 3MB. They're the guys that, I mean, the 3MB is the 2014 version of the job squad. It's kind of blatantly obvious. So it's one of those things where that culture passed once Raw had to fight Nitro. And they had to put on main event matches. They had to think up storylines for everybody. And they had to have every minute of television be intriguing compared to back in the early 90s where it was Wrestling Challenge and Superstars of Wrestling, where it was just, okay, here comes the Ultimate Warrior, and there's a guy already standing in the ring. This isn't going to last long. So I would like to see some of those guys. I would like to see a Barry Horowitz or a Jim Powers, a Brooklyn Brawler who's still working there behind the scenes, be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Right? Those are the type of guys who help kickstart what WWE is today. And they don't get any recognition. And that would be a nice that would be a nice treat. Even if they did one a year or whatever they wanted to do, I mean, that's just something that maybe do a celebrity one year and then a jobber the next year and then a celebrity or whatever you want to do. But don't get hung up on the celebrities. Don't get hung up on the Drew Careys or the Bob Barkers or whoever the hell you want to induct into the Hall of Fame who made one appearance on Monday Night Raw. I'm waiting for them to induct Maria Menounos because she just shows up at every single event as a announcer. What I was going to say before Justin brought up the topic was how well done the Hall of Fame was. I was shocked. I mean, this is a ceremony that was always broadcasted in not in full form. It was always that highlight form. You got the full ceremony if you bought the DVD, but it was broadcasted basically in highlight form. So, but this year they added a red carpet. They added interviews and a pre-show, or they're talking to people, and it really did play out like an Emmys or an Oscar or whatever you want to call award ceremony. It was really well done and really put together, and I was surprised they were able to pull that off the very first year they tried doing it live. And it looked great. It added, I think, more prestige and a higher level of quality to the event. I still prefer back in about 10 years ago when they would induct guys like Pat Patterson and Sergeant Slaughter when it was just them at, like, VFW, and they were just telling war stories and about the guy and basically roasting him before they inducted him. But that's obviously way in the past now that they have to hold the Hall of Fame in a theater. The Hall of Fame is its own beast on itself. I think it's going to evolve even more over time. They're running out of people to induct. And it looks like Sting Rock might be next year. So once you start getting to The Rock, who just wrestled 2 years ago or a year ago, you're starting to run out of big names to induct here. So they're going to have to try to freshen it up a little bit, and I'm interested to see where it's going. They have such a long legacy, but only so many. I mean, they've already inducted, I think, more than half of the people that should be inducted. But moving on from the Hall of Fame and moving on to the big event itself, WrestleMania in New Orleans for the first time in the Superdome or Silverdome, whatever you want to call it. And bam, did it kickstart with a bang. With obviously knew we were going to get a Hogan promo, but then an Austin promo. As soon as I saw a stare down, I was like, God damn, I can't believe that match never happened. And then you throw in The Rock. It's like, oh, come on. It's like those are three of the biggest icons wrestling has ever seen. And I even sent out a tweet, though. It, those three guys standing in the ring, if Cultural Personality had hit at that moment, I literally think that parts of the building might have fallen down. Just if that had happened. But as it was, just having those three guys in the ring, I thought was a fantastic way to open up WrestleMania 30, especially the 30th anniversary of WrestleMania and everything else. I thought that was a great way to kick it off. And while it was guys, one guy from one generation and then two guys from the same generation, there wasn't really a new guy in there. It still kind of worked. And it's in... there's great, if you go to WWE.com, there's a great behind-the-scenes video where Hogan calls it the Silver Dome, and you see Rock just lean over to Austin, and you could tell he just said, oh, we're going to get him good on this one, and because Austin just starts cracking up, and then immediately he comes out, and they just rip on him for the next 10 minutes, and it made for a fun promo. And made for a good time between three guys that I don't think I ever would have expected to see Austin and Hogan in the same ring, let alone with The Rock as well. That's how WrestleMania started. So you could just imagine how high WrestleMania went from there. What did you guys think of the opening segment of WrestleMania 30, Cam?
Hey, you want to talk about the ultimate markout moment? I think that promo, it lasted 17 or 18 minutes, I believe, was better than WrestleMania 29. And WrestleMania 29 was 4 hours long. Like you said, they never would have got Hogan.
Fell into the wound, thanks.
Hogan Austin, it was never going to happen. Like Rob said, those guys were never going to lose to each other, so I guess they could have just did like a no finish. But it would have been nice to see Hogan throw, or Stone Cold give him a stunner and stuff, and Hogan no-sell would have been fun. But it was a good way to kick off. Like, I think probably, I'm going to argue the greatest Raw, I guess, in recent memory. WrestleMania in recent memory.
Yeah, and Justin?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. It was cool. I mean, like, whenever I watch WrestleMania, because I sometimes have friends come over who don't really watch it as much as me or barely watch it at all, and there's three guys right away at the start. I know other people have probably said that too. These are three guys that everybody pretty much knows as a wrestling fan, so it's nice to see them interact with each other. I've seen some people clamor and saying that, you know, maybe John Cena should have come out to have the current generation represented, but I just think having Cena out there would have just kind of brought the segment down, because they, Rock, Austin, Hogan would have tried to be nice and interact with them, but everything that Cena would have done would have just been booed and would have, I think, brought down the whole segment. So I'm just glad it was just those three guys in there, probably arguably the three most recognized names in pro wrestling history, maybe, in there just chatting it up and just kind of joking around and shooting the shit with each other.
Yeah, that I think is a great point. Was that it was laid back. I don't think it would have been as laid back if Hogan didn't have the slip up at the very beginning of his promo. I think it would have been a more straightforward let's put over WWE and WrestleMania. But they were able to have a good laugh and have some fun with it, and I think it just made the whole segment better. It made it more entertaining, and it showed that these guys can work on their feet and they know what they're doing. I mean, they've been doing it for longer than most wrestling fans have been alive, so it they're fine with it, and it was fun. It was a great way to kick off the show. It was a fun way to kick off the show, and it was a great way to work in Hogan as the special guest host, especially when he didn't show up at all for, I believe, the rest of the night, because he didn't really need to. This was a night that was very, very highly anticipated going into it, so there wasn't the need for the Hogan star power where, like, WrestleMania 27 or... Yeah, WrestleMania 27 needed The Rock to make an appearance at the beginning of the show, and then at the end of the show when it was John Cena and Miz for the main event. You needed something a little bit bigger, so you send out The Rock. You didn't need that with this WrestleMania. Daniel Bryan was plenty well over enough as a babyface, and Triple H was well enough over as a heel that there was no doubt that they were going to be able to captivate that crowd throughout the entire night of both segments or matches that they were in together. That said, let's move on to the first match, which was Daniel Bryan versus the COO of WWE, Triple H. Before I get my thoughts on throw it over to somebody else. I'll throw it over to you, Justin, before I've been giving my thoughts first on everything. So I'll throw it over to you. And what did you think of the opening match? I thought it was very telling that this match was opening instead of going on right before the WWE World Championship match.
I was kind of surprised it opened, too. I didn't think it would go on right away before the match, because I always thought, as is what happened, there would be like a kind of a beatdown and a little of like a rest period. So I thought maybe there'd be a couple of matches in front of it, but they decided to go with it for the opener. It was a smart idea because the crowd was very hot for it. I thought it was the match of the night at the opener, so that's always a good thing. It was, you know, Triple H always gets that bad rep, as we talked about before, for, you know, not putting people over here and there. But, I mean, you can almost, unless he does something to screw it up in the next few months, you can almost put that to bed now with, you know, for the most part, with what happened with Daniel Bryan. I mean, he let Daniel Bryan kick out of a pedigree. And not only that, you know, Triple H took his flying knee finisher and didn't kick out. He got pinned on the first time. So this was about, you know, I think a lot of people were kind of nervous going into this, thinking that there was a possibility that there may be some kind of, you know, screwy finish, and they both end up making their way into the title match, and that did not happen. You know, Bryan won clean in the center of the ring, and then everything that happened post-match just added to the drama later on in the night. But I definitely think, like I said, with the match of the night, it was great to see Bryan put over like he was, and obviously it was a good sign of things to come later on that night.
Cam, do you have something to add?
Yeah, I mean, it really set the tempo, I guess. I mean, I'm glad it started off first. I think that really went along with the storyline of Triple H, especially with Triple H's over-the-top entrance and Daniel Bryan giving a simple entrance. I think it really played into well that Triple H thought he was going to win, and then he would have the rest of the night to chill, you know, and relax and be in the back. But I think it really set the pace for a very good show. Justin said that he didn't kick out of the finisher. He didn't get out of the yes lock a whole bunch of times. It was clean right in the middle, and it really put over Daniel Bryan. I think that Triple H is really behind the yes movement.
Yeah, I was curious when I was sitting there and I saw Triple H's entrance, and I've been very open about the fact that I worked WrestleMania 22 was the only WrestleMania I worked. WrestleMania 22 was when Triple H showed up on the throne, and somehow John Cena became a 1930s gangster in Chicago with CM Punk riding his sidecar. That was the first time we saw Triple H with the throne and the skull mask and all that fun stuff. And this time I was watching it, and I'm sitting with my wife, and we see him come out with the whole big thing, and it's like, okay, it was different from what Justin and I saw at WrestleMania 29, where it was the blow-up thing that ultimately went very, very wrong because it looked terrible because it didn't spray his body, but just his belly. I mean, you can't even say abs because it just looked like it was his gut. It really was a I commented to my wife. I was wondering, I mean, if Triple H wins this, does that mean they have to reset up that throne and do this all over again for the main event? I thought I kind of gave away the match finish by having that, because I would think that he wouldn't do that. As being COO, he could say, yeah, that's what I'm going to do this entrance again. But how ridiculous would that look? It was just something that kind of went back and forth for me. I agree with you. I like the difference between the giant over-the-top entrance for Triple H and then the very basic entrance for Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan doesn't have pyro. He's lucky the guy has music. And he comes out of the ring, and it's not even original music. So, I mean, he's lucky he gets what he has. He is a hard-working man, and honestly, I mean, he's Bret Hart without the shades to give to fans. I think he gives the fans his yes towel and rally towel at the end. I think that's it for his entrance, whereas Bret Hart gave away the shades, he gives away his towel. there's nothing else spectacular about his entrance at all. But seeing that crowd and seeing that many people chanting his name and doing the yes chant was incredible. And I had very, very low expectations for this match going into it. Now, I'm very high on Triple H as far as being a great worker. I think he doesn't get the due that he deserves as far as who he's wrestled during the Attitude Era and who he wrestled during the McMahon Helms Era and how he was always the champion, and whoever he wrestled, he always had to look better. Now, I think I fully and honestly, truly believe that he is a very good worker, obviously has a great mind for the business, and really knows how to captivate a crowd and what the right move is. And I think he showed a lot of that in this match, especially working with somebody who was smaller and more technically sound than he's used to. If you think about it, during Triple H's run, it was a lot of matches with The Rock, a lot of matches with Mankind, not so many with Steve Austin. It was here and there with Austin, a lot with Kurt Angle, but Kurt Angle even didn't wrestle as technically as Daniel Bryan does. So this showed that Triple H was willing to adapt to a different style that maybe he wasn't as comfortable with, but went out of his way to train for that and still turn it into a WWE-style match, but throw in the things that made Bryan different and makes Bryan the man of the people, or makes Bryan stand out and makes Bryan relate to the fan that's sitting in the front row or the fan sitting in the back row. That's what two guys have to do for one another, and I thought the match played out fantastically. I love the injury angle at the end of it. It's how I thought it was going to go. I thought they were going to have him beat him down, and then there was going to be a question of whether or not he would make it out for the main event. It was exactly how I thought it was going to happen, and it was still good. People need to realize, even though you predict something to happen, it doesn't have to be always unpredictable. Good storytelling is good storytelling. Let it play out, and they let it play out, and I think that it really, really paid off for them, especially building the drama leading up to the main event, because they had something to talk about that wasn't just match. There was an underlying feeling and an underlying worry or story that was being built behind the scenes and backstage leading up to the main event, and that was the perfect way to do it. Either one of you have anything else to add to that, or move on to actually, we have to go back because we didn't even talk about the pre-show. But do you have anything else to add to the first match?
No, I'm good.
No.
All right, so we'll move on to we totally skipped over the pre-show match, which was for the Tag Team Championships, and finally saw the Antonio Cesaro babyface turn. Which kind of did a 180, and not even a 180. It kind of just did like a 60. I have no idea what to think of his character right now after Raw. But at WrestleMania, it absolutely seemed like he went full-fledged babyface, and considering the match was a great 14 match, the last two teams surviving, the Usos and the Real Americans, were the last two teams that should have been surviving. The Usos retained their championships, and rightfully so. And we finally saw Cesaro snap and giant swing Jack Swagger. And you knew that probably Dutch or Zeb Coulter wanted to take the swing, but I'm afraid that probably would have dislocated almost every bone in his body. So I'm glad they just stuck with the Jack Swagger stuff. And then later on, too, with Cesaro. But this really kicked off the night on a note where I thought it was a very, very strong way to push into WrestleMania. Here's a guy that people have been cheering for months, but yet still hung around with a bad guy manager and a bad guy tag team partner. Even though he was so good, and every time he came in, people chanted for him, and people were cheering everything he did. And finally, we get the breakup, and it's his WrestleMania moment, and he gets to walk away, even though he didn't win the championship. He was able to walk away the bigger man, and was on the pre-show. He didn't win the match, but still came out looking like a superstar, and probably the next big top face in the WWE. Obviously, that changed a little bit later on in Mania and then in Raw, but for that moment, it really seemed like it was a star was born on a pre-show of WrestleMania. What did you guys think of the tag team match, the tag team elimination match, Cam?
Well, the match was predictable, I suppose, but the entire Cesaro segment moment was, I think, the start of a huge career, and I think we're going to have to start talking him over Biggie Langston and Roman Reigns right now, I guess, if you're talking, like, current stuff. Then what they did on Raw, I guess we'll get into later, completely confused me and kind of aggravates me, even though those are two of my favorite on-screen characters in pro wrestling right now, but it still really confused me. But overall, I think the Usos, I mean, they got their titles, they kept titles. I think it would have been a better moment served if they had taken them off the New Age Outlaws or Goldust and Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania, but, you know, it is what it is, and it was a good moment.
Justin?
Yeah, and it was definitely a good match to start the show. And I think, like Cam just said, it was the start of an even bigger night for Cesaro going forward, which I had on my back, I predicted on the pre-show last week. Yeah, it was definitely just a good match. It's pretty much echoing what every one of you guys said. It would have been nice to have that on the actual WrestleMania and maybe see, you know, the Usos, like Cam said, take the belt off New Age Outlaws, sure. But they ended up having a good match as it is, and it got the crowd into it, which is basically the job of the pre-show slash opening match, whatever you want to call it nowadays, and they did that job perfectly.
Yeah, and what I found interesting, too, was that it was the same, typically the same type of match that we always see when you have recently, well, I can't say always, but recently what we've always seen with the four-team elimination match. But for some reason, everybody just clicked again tonight, and it worked out really well for I think, everybody involved. Like, it showed that the Usos are the strongest tag team in the WWE right now. I'm still praying they go with a Randy Orton Batista run. I was actually rooting for them to win the titles on Raw, and the match never happened. But I think it'd be fantastic to see Randy Orton and Batista holding tag team championships while hating one another, holding the tag team championships and having two guys who, yes, they were Evolution, but two guys who are main eventers holding the championships really legitimizes, again, those championships and have them feud with the Usos or have them feud with other tag teams. They're rapidly losing their tag team division, which was on a high during SummerSlam. So they need to get that back on course. And I think two main eventers holding the title might do that. But as of now, having the Usos as tag team champions, I'm perfectly fine with that. They are a great tag team. They know exactly what they're doing in the ring, and they seem to have a good match with whoever they're paired up against. I can't think of a better tag team to be holding the championships right now. Moving on from there, we got we'll get back into the regular pay-per-view. Well, not pay-per-view anymore, network view. I don't know what to call it anymore. But back onto the main card and the six-man tag.
They're called specials now, Matt. Sorry.
They call the what?
I'm one of the wrestling outlet websites said today that WWE is changing pay-per-view names to called special events.
Okay, so moving on with the event was the I think not so special six-man tag team match between the Shield and Kane and the New Age Outlaws. Now, if you're a fan of the Shield, you got a squash to end all squashes. If you're a fan of the New Age Outlaws or Kane, you weren't very happy with how the night played out. I don't know if this was a result of the beatdown taking too long in the Daniel Bryan match, or it was a result of numerous bands playing entrance theme songs this year, or if the John Cena Bray Wyatt match needed more time than they thought that they were going to need. But this match is ridiculously short, but absolutely established the dominance of the Shield and their unity again of being one group together. And it doesn't look like they're splitting anytime soon. We might see a late summer split, but it's not going to be nearly as quickly as we thought it was going to be, especially now that they have new gear and new look. I know Michael Tarver is probably off somewhere ranting about the fact that everybody made fun of him when he wore that face mask. And now that the Shield made it cool, and everybody wants to wear a Shield Hound of Justice mask. This was mind-boggling to me, how quickly this match went. I don't even think they ever set up for a tag. I think the match was just a melee until the double, triple powerbomb and the pin. It was incredibly fast, especially for a WrestleMania match. Justin, we're all big fans of the Shield here, but I mean, we kind of would have liked to see him showcase a little bit more, but I guess you needed to throw a squash in there at some point. What did you think of this one?
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of like it's sort of a double-edged sword. It's that you wanted to see the Shield go out there and wrestle and showcase their moveset maybe for like a good 10-minute match. But at the same time, the 2-minute squash match that they had reestablished their dominance, like you said, and showed how united they were. And obviously, as we'll talk about later with Raw, showed that it doesn't look like they'll be breaking up anytime soon. So it's like I just said, one of those things where everybody's a fan of the Shield's work. Everybody likes their in-ring work, so they like seeing the long six-man tags they had. But at the same time, if they're supposed to be this dominant group like they are, they should be beating guys that are in their 40s or 50s in the ring easily, rather easily, and they did that. So it kind of helped them in a weird way, even though we all wanted to see them have a longer match. So, you know, and in turn, it actually ended up, it's actually maybe good that they ended the match when they did, because Billy Gunn suffered an injury from the from taking the powerbomb. So would I have liked to see them wrestle longer? Absolutely. Do I have a problem with them showing their dominance now going forward and showing that they're reunited in a squash match like this? No, I do not have a problem with that at all.
Yeah, it was interesting, and especially to your point of them on Raw, where I've been thinking for a while, and they've been teasing it for a little bit, that we are going to get a Roman Reigns versus Triple H feud. It looked that way. It looked like Reigns was the one that was stepping up, and he was the one that was always getting in Triple H's face. Now it looks like we might have an Evolution versus Shield feud, which could be highly entertaining if they went that route, especially if they decide to put the Young Guns over, which I'm pretty sure they're going to, considering they're banking on those three guys as being three of the top guys going forward. But I don't know, just the tease from Monday, I think, really got people interested in the idea of Evolution versus the Shield, and I'm very interested into seeing where it goes. Cam, what did you think of the squash match? Was it okay, or did you want a longer match between the Young Guns and the Old Guard?
I have enough time to finish dressing my hot dogs before the match was even over. I think that if the WWE, they're going forward, we have Daniel Bryan, of course we have John Cena, but they need another huge babyface name, I guess, and everyone else isn't quite ready. Biggie Links and those types aren't ready to take the role. I think the Shield, like we talked about last week, I think the Shield just draws plain out and simple. I mean, I'm sure they sell merch. I mean, they're moving merch as much as John Cena. I mean, of course, not as much John Cena, but they have so much stuff for the Shield. So they're moving merch. They have to – I mean, they're a draw easily. So keeping them together at least until past SummerSlam, SummerSlam at the earliest, in my opinion, that we'll see the Shield break up again, or the rumors coming up of the Shield breaking up. Overall, I guess I'm fine with the squash, because another 12, 14-minute match – really would have made the show a little bit longer than it needed to be. I think because of the build, and I complained about the build last week, that it was proper, I guess. I mean, they didn't really want to do anything elaborate with this match, and they just got the point across with the triple powerbomb.
Yeah, and I found it interesting, too. If you go to the network, or you go to WWE.com, or wherever you want to see it, they did a backstage interview with Renee Young did with The Shield, and they were joking around and having fun and showing a different side of their personality while also showing the mean streak and their desire to be the best. And with their whole new tagline of the fist being the symbol of excellence and everything else, but it's great because we're getting to see more of their personality. And what I found it funny was, like, you saw Dean Ambrose's personality as a babyface, where it was Renee Young asked him how he thought the match went, and he's like, and he responded by saying, "Does it look like we're sweating?" And she said, "Well, your hair is really wet." And he just kind of mutters, "Well, it's humid in here." And then continued on with his promo. So it was just this little quick jive, but it was showed that maybe this guy could be a CM Punk style babyface. He can pull that off. He's going to be that gray area type of guy who can step up and be a good guy if that needs to happen. Roman Reigns, I've been mentioning for weeks, has been allowed to show a lot more of his personality in backstage interviews. You see a lot more of The Rock and a lot more of that type of charisma in him than we've ever seen before. And now they're finally letting Seth Rollins show off in the ring, whereas when he was a heel, they really want him to do all his high-flying maneuvers because they didn't want him to get cheered. Now, they're pretty much saying, just go to town, do whatever the hell you want, and people are going nuts for him and finally realizing what I said, he's the second coming of Jeff Hardy. I mean, and hopefully without all the issues. I mean, this guy is good, and he can go. It's good. He's going to be a big deal. They're all going to be big deals. This match, I think, was just one of those, like you said, reestablish their dominance, reestablish the fact that they're a unit, and just kind of a pause button to move on to the next storyline, which continued on Raw, where they're now anti-authority and now they work for themselves and they're together and they consider themselves the best and they're going to be better than anybody that's put in their way, no matter who it is. Besides that match, I think the next match up on the card was the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, which always excited for a Battle Royal, always excited. My pick at the beginning was Big Show, and I said that last week during the pre-show. I kind of felt like maybe I shouldn't go with it because they had been pushing him, saying that it was his match all along. And then as soon as they went, they showed the Big Show's entrance and everything, and then as soon as they went to a wide shot, I noticed Antonio Cesaro was in the ring. And I was like, oh, well, there's my pick. Like, there is no way in hell this is going down without Cesaro winning this match, especially after having a babyface turn earlier in the night. This match cemented him as a upper mid-carder. I mean, not even this match. Picking up the Big Show as easily as he did and throwing him over the top rope is what cemented him as an upper mid-carder. That was unbelievably incredible. Now, I got a lot of flack for saying that I've never seen anybody pick up the Big Show that easily. And people are saying, oh, John Cena's done it, Undertaker's done it, and a lot of people have done it. Nobody has just scoop-slammed the Big Show, held him up there like that, and then thrown him over the top rope. John Cena was always a really, really tough lift. Batista was even a tough lift. Anybody who tried to slam or hit a huge move on the Big Show, it was tough. Cesaro had him over his head and then over the top rope with almost ease. It was absolutely incredible. I can't explain it. I mean, he doesn't look like Batista. He doesn't look like Brock Lesnar. He doesn't look like the typical guy who can lift a 400-pound man that quickly. But, I mean, we all know how strong Cesaro is from his Claudio Castagnoli days, but this was on a whole other level. Justin, I know you want to brag about this a little bit, so I'll throw it over to you.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. It's one of those things, like I said, again, where I'm watching my non-wrestling fans, they're all just kind of impressed watching that happen and see him lift him, as you said, kind of with that amount of ease, over, lift him up to a body slam, almost hold him for a couple of seconds, and then finally dump him over the top rope. He's had a face turn earlier in the night, and then this pretty much, as you said, solidified Cesaro as at least an upper mid-carder going forward, and with his alliance now with Paul Heyman that happened on Raw, it questions that maybe he could be a main event player somewhere down the line. It just goes to show you how hot and cold the WWE can be with certain people. I mean, at this time last year, he wasn't even on the WrestleMania card, and if I remember correctly, CM Punk was wearing Cesaro shirts around the WrestleMania sessions to campaign for him to get a better spot on the card or get a better, push, whatever it was. And now here we are a year later, and now we're talking about Cesaro possibly main eventing special events down the line. So it was nice to see him get the star-making moment that he got. It's nice that Paul Heyman is his manager now, because obviously that means, well, I shouldn't say obviously, it means because he had Curtis Axel and Ryback as his managers too, and that kind of fizzled away. But hopefully it's different with Cesaro, and it means that he's in line for a big push and a bright future going forward.
And that's what I was talking about earlier when it came to Cesaro and it came to Monday Night Raw, because WrestleMania, I think we can all agree, that was a babyface turn. Agreed? Everybody?
Agreed. Yeah, agreed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a straight-up babyface turn. And then Monday night, he comes out and announces he's dumping Zen Poulter. Okay, that makes sense. I was surprised he came out to the Real Americans music and had Zeb with him to begin with. I honestly said this to my wife while we were watching the show. When Cesaro entered for the pre-show match at WrestleMania in his own new flashy coat with Cesaro on the back, I was like, oh, there's the first step to him breaking away from the Real American because he's not dressed like Jack Swagger. And 15 minutes later, he broke away from Jack Swagger. But back to Raw, it was, he came out in that same gear, and he came out, and it was like, okay, he's breaking away from Zeb Coulter. We all kind of expected that because he's going to be a good guy now. But he signed with Paul Heyman, who not 20 minutes earlier in the show cut a full-on ultra-heel mode promo for probably the most hated man in professional wrestling right now, in Brock Lesnar, for ending the Undertaker streak at WrestleMania. He was being booed out of the building, and he seemed like he left the building. So it was okay. In my mind, there was no, like, Paul Heyman wasn't there anymore. He was gone. He had done his bit for the night, and he was done. I kind of thought that maybe they need to repackage somebody or make, quote-unquote, make somebody and build a new Paul Heyman guy because Brock Lesnar wasn't going to be on the show every week, and they wanted to keep Paul on the show every single week. But for it to be a guy who just turned babyface the night before is utterly confusing, because this is a guy everybody wants to cheer with a manager that everybody wants to boo. So what the hell are you supposed to do with that? It almost seemed like they booked the fact that Cesaro was going to be the new Paul Heyman guy, but we have to make him a babyface first, and then we can make him a heel again, but people are still going to cheer him, but they're going to boo Heyman. So I don't know where they're going with this story. I don't know what they're doing with this. I think Cesaro's still going to be cheered no matter what once he gets in the ring and does the stuff that he can do. But yet, you still have the most heelish manager on your roster representing him. So how that dynamic is going to work is going to be intriguing. And I don't know if it's going to work, honestly. It's something that is, I don't think it's really ever been explored too deeply. I mean, obviously, if there's somebody that can pull it off, it's going to be Paul Heyman, as far as manager-wise. But this was just flat-out strange and completely unexpected to me. Cam, what were your thoughts when he brought out Paul Heyman after just turning babyface?
If this only makes any sense and only won't make me mad for the rest of my life, if this leads to Cesaro versus Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, if they don't do that, somehow Cesaro breaks away from Paul Heyman around that time and it goes, you know, away from Heyman and calls out Lesnar and we get a babyface Cesaro versus Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, I'm all for it. But if not, then I think the WWE just screwed up again. I don't know why they would put Cesaro with another manager. He has Cesaro section signs that it grows by the show. I mean, this started off as a couple of different guys. Now it's turning into literally sections of arenas and, you know, giant silver domes. I don't get it, unless it leads to a bigger babyface push and it's a Brock Lesnar's or something along those lines at a SummerSlam or Money in the Bank or something like that. It makes zero sense to me, and it's just a very bad call.
The only thing I can think of is that they wanted to put him back as a heel so he could take the belt off of Big E Langston. Big E's kind of fallen flat as the IC champion. Yes, he was in the six-man tag with Sheamus and Cena, but he was the one that took the pinfall. Sheamus and Cena on Raw. He was the one to take the pinfall, and while he's gotten matches here and there, he hasn't really had a standout moment. And the IC title is technically the worker title. Cesaro's a worker. Cody Rhodes is a worker. Guys like that are workers. It was a nice rub to put it on him quickly and have him plow over a few people, but they haven't really put too much time or effort into him or to his character for him to get over with a crowd immediately. So I could see them feuding and Cesaro taking the belt off of him, holding that championship. He's already had the U.S. championship. God knows when one of those belts is going away. It's got to be the U.S. title. It's got to disappear. I don't even remember if Ambrose brought the title to the ring at WrestleMania. I have it in front of me right now. I could probably pull it up. But it was one of those things where it's like, this guy hasn't defended the title in, what, 4 months, 5 months, and yet he's still the champion. I was like, what happened to that 30-day rule that they used to have for all champions, where it was like, if you didn't defend the title in 30 days, you forfeited it, or it was stripped of you, or whatever it was, whatever happened. But here's a guy who's had the belt for that long, and yet it's not even a prop anymore. It's just a thing he carries to the ring. I mean, and then he leaves it on the apron while the rest of the match goes on. It's kind of a hard thing to swallow when it's a championship title that could probably boost somebody else's career, where he doesn't need the boost, but they also don't want to have him lose. What they need is, now that they're against the authority, is for the authority to come out and say, hey, you haven't defended that title in 5 months, give it back to us, you're no longer the U.S. champion. I can see that happening, but then you still need to get rid of that belt. You need one mid-card title, and that's going to be the Intercontinental Championship, and I think that's the next step for Cesaro, and then maybe after that is going to be Money in the Bank, because Money in the Bank, I believe, is not until July. But like I said, on Monday, Monday is just totally cracked out as far as Cesaro goes. It's something that was it seemed like it was booked backwards, and I don't know how that happens, and I don't know where they're going with it or what they're gonna do. Hopefully, they have an idea in mind, but. Right now, it doesn't really seem like it. Moving on from Cesaro's big win, we get into one of the main events of the card, and John Cena and Bray Wyatt. Now, this match and this story and everything that went into this was built for New Orleans. I don't know if our listeners or you guys that have ever watched American Horror Story, but this past season took place in New Orleans and with witches and voodoo and all that fun stuff. So having the Wyatt family in New Orleans in a main event spot with all these creepy antics going on, it really added to the mystique of the Wyatt family. And they put on, I think they put on a damn good match, Cena and Wyatt. A lot of people have been saying it was too slow or whatever they want, or it was just because Cena won, it wasn't the right call. I'm sorry, it wasn't slow, it was telling a story. Slow was Triple H versus Undertaker 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I'm sorry. That was slow. That was hit a move and then lay down. Hit a move, lay down. This was Bray Wyatt
sitting in the middle of the ring with John Cena laying on his lap singing, "I've got the whole world in my hands." That's storytelling, especially when the entire arena starts singing it afterwards. That is something that is a moment in WrestleMania history. That's not a rest period. This is absolute, it was storytelling at its finest. And for wrestling and wrestling storytelling, John Cena is Superman. Superman triumphs in the end. Now, I mean, there was some talk, and I don't know what's going to happen on SmackDown. There's some talk that their feud isn't over yet or whatever it is. But if this was the blow-off of a feud, this was how it's supposed to end. The good guy has to conquer the demons and stand tall and choose morals over what they want to be monsters. That was the idea of it. That's what was supposed to happen. So if you want to see a really good storytelling in a professional wrestling match, this is a great example of it. And one that I know I'll be, it's a John Cena match that I will be happy to go back and watch over and over again just because of what led up to it and how it played out. I thought it was tremendously well done. Cam?
This is really my favorite John Cena match that doesn't have the name Edge or CM Punk in front of it. Like you said, it was perfect. I think going into it, I was really wanting a Bray Wyatt win just to really solidify a new heel, but I think it happened regardless of the finish. I think overall, like you said, it was just, I mean, great. I mean, I think the finish was a little sudden and a little off timing, and if you take away that, I think it was probably the best match of the night. Triple H Daniel Bryan was pretty good, but I think overall this match just really solidified a great storytelling match between John Cena, and I think really, really kudos to John Cena on this, dude.
Yeah, well, that was another thing that I really liked about this is we saw Cena in a different light. It wasn't about the title. He's had other matches where it was about something else or it was about how he wanted or he was vengeful or he had issues with somebody. But this was the first time where he had something that looked like a legitimate threat to him physically and mentally, and he had to overcome that, and it legitimately looked tough for him in the ring. I think this was better acting than any of the movies he's ever been in. This was fantastic. The spot that always pops into my head when I'm thinking back on this match is when he played for the five knuckle shuffle and comes back and Wyatt's in his weird ass spider stance. I still don't know how he walks like that. I mean, the guy's close to 300 pounds, and he's able to DDP yoga his way around the ring. But that was, I mean, just that spot itself was creepy, unsettling, and perfect for what they needed to put into this match. Justin.
Yeah, I completely agree. It was a good match, good storytelling. I know some people, you know, were sour on the match just because Bray Wyatt ended up losing. But to me, you know, lots of times people put way too much into the results of a match rather than the actual storytelling or the actual match itself. And that's a perfect example here with Bray trying to get John Cena into this darker, edgier, like, persona, and Cena fighting the urge to do it before finally reverting back to his normal ways. So I didn't have a problem after, like, the initial, well, Bray Wyatt should have won there. You know, going back and watching it, it's not something I had a problem with, especially with the follow-up on the next night on Raw, where the Wyatt's got the win. The crowd, you know, obviously it was a post-WrestleMania crowd, but the crowd was still into them. They were doing the he's got the whole world in his hands, waves, chant, whatever you want to call it the whole time. So I think the feud is going to get extended at least to Extreme Rules, and that's just by not knowing what happens on SmackDown, because it seems like every WrestleMania program, for the most part, gets moved on to Extreme Rules in some way, shape, or form. So I think maybe you'll see Bray pick up a feud or pick up a win back there at that sorry, not pay-per-view, special event. But I think Bray Wyatt is good enough to stick around as a top player for the simple fact of that he's just different and unique, and his promos grab everybody's attention, and you don't have people chanting or saying stupid stuff during them. They're actually attentive and listening to what he's talking about, even though it sounds weird and creepy at the time. And I think that is what's going to help Bray Wyatt stick around at the top of the card going forward. So as much as I would have liked to see him win at WrestleMania, I think long-term, I think Bray Wyatt has a bright future, and I'm kind of curious to see what happens with John Cena long-term. I think he's underrated as a wrestler. I think he's a guy who can carry himself in the ring. I think he can have entertaining matches, but it's almost to the point where you see what's happened on Raw now, and you see who the Daniel Bryan and Shield Puma are going to be the top storyline. What's next for John Cena after Bray Wyatt? Does he go into a feud with Cesaro? Does he maybe get a rematch with Brock Lesnar now that Lesnar has broken the streak and Lesnar can get his win back over Cena and Lesnar can have two wins in a row? I'm just curious to see what's next for John Cena after the Bray Wyatt feud and if he's even going to come close to the WWE title picture for the summer or even the remainder of the year.
And it's interesting that you bring up the Undertaker and Brock Lesnar. Obviously, that's the next match on our card. But I want to break in a little bit with some breaking news of Sting just signing, or at least the news just leaking that he has signed a contract with the WWE. There's no time frame or leak of when he will be appearing on television, but as of right now, all indications are that Sting is WWE locked and loaded and waiting to be brought onto television. So there you go. There's some little breaking news for you if you hadn't seen it already before, if you're listening to this on tape delay, which it seems like everybody is listening to our show on tape delay. Now, here's my little rant for this week. One, I spent a lot of time today, and Cam knows because he's the only one who went along with this, but I spent a lot of time today on Twitter and other social media sites posting about our show and posting about the fact that if you listen to our show live and you wanted to win a special Mattel prize pack, all you had to do was retweet that tweet and that had our link to our radio show in it. Now, and then you had to listen live because I would give you instructions on how you could win and how you would be able to, who would win and how everything would play out. That being said, Cam's the only one who retweeted it. Now, I'm more than happy to send you something, Cam. Whether or not I'm willing to pay for postage for somebody that works for me, I don't know. That I'm still debating, especially since you're so damn far away. But besides that,
I will gladly pay for the postage, sir.
Besides that, I know there's people that listen to the show. I know there's people that have commented to me or remarked to me about the show and have talked to me about it. And obviously, they're listening on tape delay through iTunes or what, or downloading from Blog Talk Radio or from our website, at htcwrestling.com or at insidepulse.com, whatever the deal may be. If that is the case, if you are listening on tape delay and can only listen on tape delay and don't want to listen live or can't listen live or whatever the reason may be, all we ask from you is that you go to iTunes and go to our page on iTunes and leave a review. There's only one way of getting a podcast popular, and that's by word of mouth. And we're spending a lot of money that I don't have. So if you listen to the show on tape delay, I beg of you, please go on, write a review. Hey, if you hate us and want to just, I guess, troll our iTunes review, you can put that if you want to. I right now am just at that point where we want to hear from you guys, and I'm trying to give away free stuff here, and I'm not getting any feedback. So I hope this doesn't continue and we can start getting more and more live call-ins and more people listening live. But until that point, if you are listening on tape delay, I hope that you could take 10 minutes out of your time or out of your day, which I know we all have ridiculously busy days. If you could just take 10 minutes and go to iTunes and just write up a quick review for our show or just rate our show, whatever you wish to do, I would highly, highly appreciate it. And Inside Folks would, and everybody involved would. Just search HTC Wrestling or search Inside Pulse Radio, and I'm sure we will pop up. Or even if you just search PulseCast, I'm pretty sure it just pops up if you search that. Please do. We really encourage that. We want to hear from you guys. We love hearing from you guys. And I want to give away free stuff, so start listening live if you can. Moving on from that, and now my rant's over. We get into the second biggest story, or second, I'd say there's a 2A and 2B for WrestleMania in this whole week, and that's the streak ending. And, yeah, whatever your thoughts are, it obviously we can't go back and rewrite history. Brock Lesnar defeated The Undertaker clean 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring, and Undertaker is 21-1. Should that be a big deal for a fake wrestling entertainment thing? No, but for us who have lived through the streak, it's a big deal. It's a big deal that Undertaker didn't stop at 20-0. If he had stopped at 20-0, it would have been the end of the era match with Triple H and Shawn Michaels and Hell in a Cell. He would have left at 20-0, and he would never had to have another streak again, another streak match again. He could have been perfectly fine, and everything would have been great. It was a nice round number. We would have gotten the CM Punk Undertaker match, but that match while very good, was very rushed in its hype for the match. So I don't know. I think I would have preferred it all to end at 20-0, and it be nice and even, nice round. Undertaker gets a nice send off instead of having to be taken away in an ambulance from the Superdome after suffering a major concussion from a simple leg takedown, which was my awful, awful feeling going into this match last week, was that something was going to happen to him. But all indications are that Taker wanted Lesnar to beat him in 2010 at WrestleMania. It didn't happen then, and they had to keep pushing it off, and it happened this time. So, if you want to believe everything going on out there and everything that happened, this was inevitable. Brock and Undertaker are good friends. I don't know if they go and have barbecues together, but they respect one another enough to try to take care of one another. They've always tried to help each other's career. Taker was the one to really legitimize Brock Lesnar in the WWE along with Kurt Angle. And if this is how Undertaker wanted it to go, then this is how he wanted it to go. Now, obviously, the match didn't live up to any expectations people had. That all comes from what we've been hearing of, that he suffered a major concussion at the beginning of the match, and almost the whole match was laid on Brock Lesnar's shoulders as far as calling shots and telling the story. I wouldn't put so much blame on Lesnar for the quality of the match, especially considering this match followed Bray Wyatt and John Cena, which was another slow storytelling match. This was a slow match, not as much story, but it was slow. So people kind of didn't get into it as much until there was a pinfall, and you could hear a pin drop. Because I have never heard an arena that quiet after a match. The closest, and it's scary to say this, but the closest I've ever heard an arena to that was when Owen Hart fell to his death. But even in that moment, the arena did not know that Owen had died on his way to the hospital. They didn't know if it was part of the show. It obviously did not look as part of the show. And they just were kind of just going along with whatever WWE was producing. They were going on with the show, so they probably considered him to be fine. This was out of the blue, one F5, and Undertaker was pinned. After 21 years of him beating everyone, he lost to a part-time WWE guy who, for all intents and purposes, spit in the face of pro wrestling for a good amount of years before coming back here. Now, I have a problem with that simply because of that situation. And the fact that he's a part-timer when this could have gone to anyone else. But it's not my call. It's not the fans' call. It didn't even seem like it was the WWE creative's call. It seemed like it was the Undertaker's call. He said in the past that he really doesn't care about the streak. It just was kind of an organic thing that kept piling up, and it became a marketing ploy, and they kind of rode the wave. So he didn't really care if it ended. And if he wanted to lose to a good friend of his, and that friend happened to be Brock Lesnar, that's what he was going to do. That's what happened. I can't fault either man for that, their opinions. That's their opinion. As a wrestling fan, I'm disappointed, but I understand friendship, and I understand that sometimes friendship has to overtake business, and that's kind of what this felt like to me. Justin, I know you had a lot to say about this one.
To my initial reaction, and kind of like you said, you know, there's a 70,000 stone silence fan in the Silverdome. That could have been said for the same thing for everybody at my party. It just kind of, you know, happened. And in the back of my mind, I knew it was the third F5 that he had taken. And I'm like, that's the third one that he's hit. Maybe he doesn't kick out of that one. But at the same time, I was thinking about WrestleMania 28, where I think he kicked out of two pedigrees and a sledgehammer shot and the pedigree super kick combo. So I was like, whatever. And then it happened. And everybody in my party just kind of stunned silence, like just Superdome. We were kind of looking at the TV, and I think it almost took a minute for somebody to say anything and just, you know, an explicit what the you can fill in the rest. But my initial reaction, like you said, maybe it's friendship. I've read things where maybe it was more of Vince's call than Undertaker's call, but nobody really knows. I think Undertaker has built up enough, you know, respect and status in the WWE where he'll get the final say in this no matter what. My initial reaction was kind of like yours, Matt, disappointment. This guy's a part-timer. I doubt he's going to be around for the next few months. And then the more I think about it, while I'm still not that thrilled with it, I can get it if they want to use later this year in the summer and maybe the fall. And maybe they, when Lesnar signed this new contract, they got to do more dates this year. Maybe he gets to wrestle and shows up a little bit more. Maybe he wrestles at SummerSlam and Hell in a Cell at Survivor Series, and you just build him up as this unstoppable force going forward, only to lose at next year's WrestleMania. I think you'll see Brock Lesnar holding the title going into next year's WrestleMania at this point. If it's me, it would have been happening at this WrestleMania, but it'll probably be next year's WrestleMania. They're going to try to build a new star off of that with whoever it is, beating Lesnar at WrestleMania, where Lesnar just the previous year had beaten the streak, and we'll just say presumably has been plowing through stars in 2014. Now, like I said, that only works to me, at least, if Lesnar agrees to work more dates. If he's going to show up for the same amount of dates he did this past year, it just doesn't work. And we all know Lesnar doesn't really want to put any effort into a match, or I shouldn't say put any effort. He doesn't want to go into planning a match. He doesn't want to go out and spend extra time working with somebody to plan a match, and he's just kind of there for the money, and he doesn't really care about anything else. That is why part of me also would have loved to see somebody like anyone from The Shield, or who I think would have been perfect for it, is either Bray Wyatt or Cesaro. Those might not have been able to come until next year, but like I've been just saying, you know, if they're going to build up Lesnar from this and he's going to work more dates, then by all means, that's fine. But I just don't think that's something they're going to do going forward. I don't think that's something Lesnar wants to do. I think WWE will try to do it with the same amount of dates, and I don't know if fans will buy into it. As far as just the whole streak itself goes, I've always been someone who's been indifferent towards it. I've always thought if the right person comes along and he can get a good rub and get a good push from ending the streak, by all means, I would have had no problem with it. Was Lesnar the guy that I ever thought of in my mind? No. I never thought Lesnar as actually being a part-timer would should be someone to break the streak. So am I disappointed it ended the way it did? Yes. Obviously, like you said, watching the match, Taker doesn't have that much left. That might have been his last match. I think this actually makes a rumored Taker or Sting match for next year even more possible, because you don't have to worry about it being a waste of the streak match, and you can just have two legends in an old dream match go out there. And I'm sure you've read that Sting is somebody who'd be willing to work on this match year-round with Taker to get a good match out of him and make sure they go out the proper way. So I think that kind of makes that match a little bit more possible if Taker has one more match left in him. So it's, you know, Lesnar ending the streak is one of those things where I get it if they want to build him up throughout the year. But if it's just going to be something where he's going to work the same amount of dates, show up for the same amount of time going forward, then it's going to be a waste and could have been used on somebody like Bray Wyatt or Cesaro. You could have done something next year where Paul Heyman brings his third guy to try to have the Undertaker end this streak when Punk and Lesnar couldn't do it, and then you have Cesaro come and do it, and Cesaro beats him, and that instantly makes Cesaro a star for A, ending the streak, and B, doing something CM Punk and Brock Lesnar, two of the biggest names in the last 10 years of this business, couldn't do. So, you know, that could have been there, or you could have had Bray Wyatt, who I've said on the show in the build-up to WrestleMania, and I've written in my columns, you could basically trade off John Cena with Bray Wyatt from the Cena Wyatt program this past year WrestleMania, and it almost makes as much sense if Bray was cutting those promos on Undertaker. So, you know, those two guys I think would have been better options, and unless Brock Lesnar is working more dates and is agreeing to do more stuff going forward, I just don't see what it could do, because even if you give Brock Lesnar the title heading into next year WrestleMania, it still doesn't change that much, at least for me.
Yeah, it's it's tough to swallow because, Brock Lesnar was already main eventer. Brock Lesnar was the main eventer with the second he came back. There was no reason to legitimize him. He was already legit. There was no reason to give him any key victories because he didn't need them. He lost in his first match back, but it didn't hurt him in any way. People were still paying to see him. So why add this to his resume? And you're going to go back now and you're going to see that Brock Lesnar was the king of the ring. He was the undisputed champion. He was he headlined WrestleMania. He was the UFC UFC heavyweight champion. I mean, anything you can think of, Brock Lesnar has done. So adding this to it doesn't do anything for him, his legacy, or his career. Whereas any of the guys you mentioned, or pretty much anyone else on the roster besides Triple H or maybe John Cena, it would have added probably, you would have probably made at least $1 million off of a new person beating the streak. All you had to do was have that person have his own version of Brock Lesnar's Eat, Sleep, and Beat the Streak t-shirt, have his own version of that t-shirt, and if that guy was over far enough, if that guy was as over as Bray Wyatt or as over as Cesaro, they would have made $1 million easily off of that one person and merchandising and promoting live events and putting that guy in the front of their company compared to a man who's going to go away now for another 4 or 5 months, maybe have one or two more matches this year, and then maybe have another WrestleMania match next year. So I just don't get the point. And that's why I really fully believe that this was a friendship deal before it was a business deal. It doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't make sense business-wise, and it means nothing business-wise. That's the only way I can put it. Cam, what do you have to add to this, historic moment in wrestling and in WrestleMania history?
The first thing I want to say is when I saw Brock Lesnar calling spots, I knew there was something wrong with The Undertaker. I almost feel bad now that I know The Undertaker was seriously injured, I guess, during the match, how horrible the match was going, and I found myself just on Twitter rather than actually watching what maybe right now, in my opinion, The Undertaker's last match, maybe. I mean, what's the point of him wrestling Sting if he, you know, let a part-timer, his, you know, friend or whatever you want to put it, go over on, I mean, probably maybe the biggest shock in, what, maybe WrestleMania history. At first, like I said, like Justin said, everyone I was, you know, watching WrestleMania with was in complete shock. One of my good friends is a complete Undertaker fan, a huge mark for his whole life, and he didn't watch Raw because of it, and I think it's kind of taken a little serious. I don't really know what to say. I mean, I can understand your frustration with it, but I think that Undertaker, like you said, he didn't really care about the streak. All good things need to come to an end, and if you want a huge shock factor, I guess this was it. And kind of a bad omen for Daniel Bryan on the same night Daniel Bryan's going to win the world title, because I think that if had Undertaker won, that those yes chants at the end of the night would have been, I mean, it was still a pretty good pop and a good way to end the night, but I still think it would have been a lot louder had Undertaker not lost 15 minutes, 20 minutes before that.
See, I think it helped, and I had a problem because I started getting a little worried when I saw that this match was coming right before the main event. Or did they have the divas in between? They had the divas in between. But it was coming pretty damn close to the main event, so it was like, okay, are they putting this on so we can leave on a high note and that silent or nasty spot happened in the middle of the night? I don't know. It's still mind-boggling to me. I'm interested, and God, I hope it happens. I don't know if it ever will, but I hope that they do a career retrospective similar to what they just did with the Ultimate Warrior, and have Taker talking about matches and talking about what went into them and how things played out and what went down. Whether it be in book format, DVD format, whatever you want to do, I want to know the stories. I want to know the stories behind this man's career, because his career is legendary. I don't care what sport you're in or what you like to watch, or if your favorite television show, your favorite movie, your favorite sports team, whatever it is. This man was a legend in this industry and will forever be a legend in this industry. And just like we want to hear about Muhammad Ali's career, or we want to hear all the details about Barry Bonds and what went into his career, or Roger Clemens, or you want to read Tom Seaver, Nolan Ryan's book because of or Jim Abbott in his inspirational story. I want to hear or read the Undertaker story from him. Like I said, I don't know if it's ever going to happen, and there's a very good chance it might not, simply because of the man he is and the career that he led. But this would be a moment that I really want to know more about. What I've been doing, and I was actually doing some research after watching this match. And if you go back and watch this match, the end of this match, and Taker standing and then eventually walking to the back, you see a camera shot where they go wide, and you see him walking up the ramp with the entire arena, and you, just from a distance, walking up and walking out. They did the exact same camera shot for both Ric Flair's retirement match and Shawn Michaels' retirement match. I'm not saying The Undertaker's retiring and this is his last match, but I wouldn't bet against it. That was a very subtle technique that could have been used to just sell the fact that he lost the streak, or it could have been the pinpoint moment saying that this is Undertaker's final match. Because really, where does he go from here? He can't wrestle weekly. He can't wrestle more times during the year. You don't want him to, because he is in bad shape. And I'm not talking, he still looks physically, he still, appearance-wise, looks physically good. But there's so much going on underneath the skin that cannot be repaired enough to take bumps inside a wrestling ring. It just doesn't happen. The streak's over. Yep, it was a shocking moment. I think since that time we've been shocked far more than that ever would be. But if nothing else, I think this helped Daniel Bryan at the end of the night, because we saw a conquering hero compared to kind of a fallen legend, and maybe his last match. It very well could be his last match. Moving on, I guess we could talk about the next Divas Battle Royal, but I'd rather talk about the Raw Divas match. The Divas Battle Royal Elimination Match, whatever it was, I think there's two interesting spots. One, Cameron from Total Divas left her top and apparently disappeared for the entire match because she made her clothes too. Secondly, was AJ tapping out for Trinity, or Naomi, sorry, tapping out for Naomi so she could retain the title. I was very surprised they didn't play that up more until we got to Raw and got Paige's debut on Monday Night Raw. Now, I'm laying it out there. I think she's already in bed by now, or either in bed or taking care of the kids. But my wife called for a new woman to debut on the Raw after Mania, and she would win the Divas title. I swear to God, she said it 2 months ago. I think she said it at Elimination Chamber that that was going to happen. Now, I told her, I'm like, the only person I could think that would be capable of doing that would be Paige, but they haven't brought her up yet. And she's like, well, that makes her perfect because that means she's a new face that nobody's ever seen, that nobody's really seen before. So she's going to come out and she'll shock everybody and take the title off of AJ because AJ's beaten everybody else. As God as my witness, she said all of this to me 2 or 3 months ago. And damned if it didn't happen exactly how she laid it out. I don't know what else to say. I mean, Paige is the first ever NXT Women's Champion. She's still the Women's Champion down there. And she's the youngest Divas Champion in history. I think technically she would be the youngest Women's Champion if they still had the Women's title. Youngest Women's Champion in history as well, as she has just turned 21. Paige is a great talent. She's very good in the ring. She has a unique look, especially among the Divas that are on the roster right now. And she can get a crowd around her, as we've seen in NXT. The fact that, and I've been calling for AJ to drop the title for months. I want her to be the crazy chick chasing whoever the champion is. This Paige-AJ feud could be great for the women's division. The match at WrestleMania, I think, was a placeholder to get us to Raw. Kind of how all of WrestleMania 29 was a placeholder to get to Raw. That's what happened. Paige came out, I think, stole the show, at least at that time, and walked away with the shock of the night. I think it's great. I think it's and all the vignettes for the new talent being brought up are fantastic. Bo Dallas with his new cheesy gimmick. I thought that video package was incredible with the impossible, and the Adam Rose character is just a wrestling Russell Brand. And dear God, I hope he stays a wrestling Russell Brand because it will be amazing. But back to Paige, I'm throwing over to you first, Justin. I know Cam's had plenty of time to watch Paige grow and mature on NXT, but what was your first reaction after, first reaction to WrestleMania and then your reaction to Paige capturing the title on Raw?
The WrestleMania Battle Royal, just, you know, whatever. You know, it happened. AJ won, that's great. On Raw on Monday, I was kind of surprised that it did happen. Like you said, I know some people kind of were of the mindset that they wanted to see a more of a build-up to this feud, but I think having Paige come in and just chase AJ right away for the title would have just kind of been almost the same thing, you know, as we've been seeing the last few months. Whereas here comes AJ, who's overconfident because she's finally conquered all the divas in the locker room. And then here comes Paige to kind of come out and say, well, you know, hey, I'm here now. And then AJ gets overconfident and then Paige comes in and beats her. I thought it was the right crowd to do it in front of because
this is a crowd full of people who are the travel from everywhere from WrestleMania. They are more of the smarky internet crowd who would watch NXT, where if you go to a place like some random small Midwestern or Southern town, they might not be as apt to NXT as the people that were in that crowd for Raw were. So it was a smart place to debut. And outside of just, you know, the small missed execution of the page turner there at the end, I thought it was a pretty well-done segment. It automatically reverts AJ back now to the crazy psycho character who's obsessed with getting the Divas title back, so that's why I'm kind of glad her losing happened right away. It gives a little bit of freshness to the Divas division with a new champion on top, so I like that part of it. As far as everybody else goes, I like the NXT Vignix. I'm looking forward to Adam Rose. I think Bo Dallas's character, if done right, could be a solid mid to upper mid card heel in the WWE, depending on where they want to go with it. So you got that. Hopefully now with Summer Rae breaking away from Fandango, she can actually become more of focused in the Divas division and kind of do some of the same stuff she's been doing on NXT, which is something I've enjoyed. So there's a lot to look forward to going forward. I'm still hoping that sooner rather than later, maybe Tyler Breeze gets called up too, because I think he can be a better version of Fandango. So there's a lot to like with NXT guys being and girls being called up going forward, and I think hopefully Paige being called up is just the start of some new fresh faces on TV.
And Kim?
Before I touch on Paige, Bo Dallas just doesn't have it. I don't care what they give him. I don't know. I don't even know where to start. Like, his gene pool just missed him completely, just overshot him and just went right to Alder Bray Wyatt. I think, like you said, Raw, the night after Raw was the big debut. I think calling the Dean Ambrose thing like Matt did last week was almost as accurate. You know, it was pretty close, but we're giving the Divas division revitalization with a champion that, in my opinion, is basically AJ Lee, but just with no tan. I guess that I think that she's just not too different enough for me to be a wow factor. I think it's a good change of pace, especially if they're going to give Summer Rae a full-on by herself just in the Divas division and focus on Total Divas. I think they could mix it up. The WrestleMania match I don't really want to touch on because there's kind of no point. I think putting them after the Undertaker match was kind of just mean. I think they kind of should have just did a WrestleMania 29 and just said, okay, we're just going to let the fans settle in for a little bit, and then eventually we'll let Rev Theory play Randy Orton's theme song. I think if we're talking about NXT calls, Adam Rose and we said Bo Dallas, I think they're still missing out. I know you want to say he's not ready, but two words, Sami Zayn.
Who is the one that you wanted to call up?
Whatever you want to call him. I don't know if it's a West Coast bias because I've seen him work so many amateur shows, but I think he's he's more than ready, I think, in my opinion.
I still didn't hear who you said. I'm sorry. Tyler Breeze?
Sami Zayn.
Oh, Sami Zayn, yeah. No, Sami Zayn's getting called up. Yeah, Sami Zayn's getting called up whenever they feel like it because he's ready to go. I think the reason why we're seeing Bo come up and we're seeing Adam Rose come up is because they've been in developmental so long, they're kind of going with the sink or swim with them. Which is fine. They've done vignettes for them, which is more than what they do for a lot of the guys. And they're giving them a chance at the main roster. I don't think Bo Dallas got a fair shake the first time he went through. I personally enjoy the character, the heel character he plays, simply because I think that's the character John Cena should have been playing if he was ever going to do a heel turn. I think that would have been perfect. Bo Dallas, for me, I think he'll have a nice little mid-card heel that people will catch on to. I mean, look at how fans have started to catch on to Bad News Barrett. Never thought that was going to happen, but it did. Bo Dallas right now is Simon Dean without the cheesy fitness guru gimmick around him. he's just that grating personality that you don't, or that you just have to punch in the face. And that works well for wrestling. Adam Rose, they've been from Leo Kruger. I think he was someone before Leo Kruger. He went to Leo Kruger, and now he's Adam Rose. Completely different character than whatever Leo Kruger was. Kruger was more of a Bray Wyatt-type character, and I think that's why they had to change him. But from all indications, he's having the time of his life as Adam Rose, and it looks like it's going to be a damn fun character. I'm looking forward to that debut, especially if his party carries him down to the ring, too, because that is just amazing and a great way to enter an arena. But besides that, it's a nice time to be bringing up talent. It's a nice time. It's the day after WrestleMania. It's exactly what WWE needs. They need new blood. They need people to be brought in. And these are two guys who have been in developmental for a very long time. It is time for them to get that sink or swim. And they're giving them a fair shake. I will say that. They're giving them a very fair shake by promoting them and by getting some talk about them out there on the internet and through their own television shows. Last I heard, Tyler Breeze might be debuting on SmackDown soon. So that's another guy who might be coming up soon. Sami Zayn, I think, is going to be that guy who, if somebody gets hurt, they have him as kind of like the utility player. He's going to be the guy that, okay, this top star got hurt. We got to elevate somebody, but we need somebody to fill whoever is elevated place. Let's bring up Sammy. And he's going to skyrocket. I mean, he has everything he needs to be not only the next John Cena, but also a better athlete. I mean, he's fluent in so many different languages. He's very personable. He's a normal, good-looking guy. He's very approachable. He's a guy that WWE will build around as soon as they bring him up. I don't think they want to rush him. They want to try out these other guys first, get some characters in there, and I'm fine with that. I'm really looking forward to seeing this new blood in the ring. And even some of the guys they have on the roster getting a reboot. I mean, Wade Barrett is Bad News Barrett, but he got a win on Monday. He was able to go out and get a clean victory. Fandango went through the whole breakup with Summer Rae. So maybe he'll take on a more serious type of character and be able to be a contender for championships or start a tag team with somebody. Who knows? Maybe it's going to be him and Jack Swagger now. As real Americans, that could still work. Summer gets out of that picture. She goes on to the Divas division. That's fine. That'll work over there. So there is a lot going on. There is a lot to look forward to. And I think they're finally getting back to the idea of WrestleMania is our Super Bowl. It's the end of the season. And now the Raw after is where we start anew. And they lost that the last couple years. Unfortunately, last year, they really lost it. And everything happened on Raw. I think they heard the fans. They heard people talking about it. And they figured out what they did wrong. And they fixed it this year. Both Raw and WrestleMania were fantastic. I cannot put a down note on either one. Obviously, people are going to say that the streak or whatever you want to say was terrible. There was a lot of underlying circumstances in that where you can't fault anybody for it. It was just something that happened, and you got to deal with it. The show as a whole was amazing. So was Raw. I'm very happy with this past week or the Sunday and Monday, I should say. And the way that WWE was able to tie the two events into one another instead of saving everything for the larger, not the larger show, but the larger audience on Monday. That all being said, we have one more match, and that's the main event for the world title. Batista, Randy Orton, Daniel Bryan, along with Triple H and Stephanie eventually coming down ringside. I thought Stephanie broke her leg for a minute there when she took part of the plancha through the ropes. But a triple threat match that showed that two big guys and one little guy will work. I saw how they played out the match and how they teased the Evolution reunion and how they both they executed that Batista bomb into a reverse RKO through a table. I don't know how Randy Orton is walking after landing on top of the monitor. I mean, his spine went spine first on the monitor. But they were able to pull off the best triple threat match since Triple H, HBK, and Chris Benoit wrestling E20. It's been 10 years, and this was the best one since then. And we finally got a culmination of a storyline that started at SummerSlam. And before SummerSlam, think about that. We're always talking about and complaining about how it's always short-term booking, that the audience and WWE believes the audience only remembers last week. The Daniel Bryan story started with him and John Cena. And even before that, put him and John Cena for the WWE Championship at SummerSlam. And Triple H turning on him, forming the Authority, and everything going into it and holding him back and blah, blah, blah. But that is a good 6 to 8 months of build for this one payoff win. And it felt good to any Daniel Bryan fan who followed this odyssey and followed this story, really got the payoff that was right, that was ironically best for business, and was the story of how it should be told. And I think the icing on the cake was just the fact that it was a pretty damn good match, too, on top of it. Justin?
Yeah, I agree. I thought there were a lot of similarities to the WrestleMania 20 triple threat with the whole, you know, WrestleMania 20 Triple H and Shawn Michaels put Chris Benoit through a table, and here it was Batista and Randy Orton doing it. There were definitely a lot of those similarities, you know, obviously outside the whole stretcher thing. I agree it was a good culmination of everything that's happened since SummerSlam. Has it been the long-term plan, though, the whole time is what I think I have to ask. While obviously it ties in nicely going back to SummerSlam, I don't know if this was the obvious choice going forward. I think this is something they realized they had to do after they realized how much the fans revolted against Batista and Randy Orton after the Royal Rumble. I don't think had CM Punk walked out. I think had CM Punk not walked out, I still think Daniel Bryan would have found his way into the title match, just not by facing Triple H first. I think we'd have gotten Punk, Triple H, and Bryan in the title match. But as much as I'm glad that it kind of tied together this whole long-term booking since SummerSlam, I think I don't know if I would be willing to call it the plan since then, because I think we've seen that they were not ready to put Daniel Bryan in the title match, and now they pretty much had to after what happened with the Royal Rumble and Batista not getting the reaction he did coming back. Mm-hmm. So overall, I definitely agree. It's a good, even though it might not have been the plan, it's a good tie-in, a good final resolution for Bryan. Now it's up to now. I'm curious to see if now that he's finally the champion, is he still going to get the same reaction? Is the crowd still going to back him going forward? His segments were the highest-rated segments on Raw this past Monday. Obviously, he still got a great reaction from the post-WrestleMania crowd. Now let's see how it is a few weeks down the line and what's next for him. If it was me booking, and I said this in my Raw review, and I said this in my piece this past week, I would personally love to see any form of War Games match at Extreme Rules between The Shield and Daniel Bryan against Evolution and Kane. Even if they can't do the two-ring structure due to, you know, arenas not being able to fill it and having to cut seats, even if you did a Hell in a Cell-style War Games match, I would still be all for that. Obviously, not having the two rings doesn't make it original, but I still think it would be awesome to see, and it holds off on any type of Daniel Bryan rematch you have going forward. Instead of doing that right away at the next review, you can do War Games, and then at the next show, you can maybe do a Batista match, and then maybe another Triple H match somewhere down the line before he presumably at some point gets into a program with Brock Lesnar, whether it's in the summer or later on in the fall. So it's good to see Daniel Bryan get the recognition that he deserves at WrestleMania. If anybody out there hasn't watched the Daniel Bryan documentary from this past Tuesday on his road to WrestleMania, I highly recommend it. It's a very good view just listening to him and everybody else talk about him. Definitely worth an hour of your time to go out and go watch. So it's a great way to end WrestleMania by sending the fans home happy, unlike even though the WWE may think they did it at WrestleMania 29, they really didn't send the fans home happy then. So it was a good culmination of Bryan getting to the top.
Yeah, and Tim?
Yeah, I mean, we give the entire wrestling community, I guess, gives Triple H a lot of crap, but this was good long-term booking. I mean, CM Punk and Paul Heyman was good long-term booking. It started getting a little bad at the end, but this is just another example of the WWE can really sink their teeth into good programming, and now, like Justin said, it's just up to the Yes Movement continuing and not losing any steam, so the WWE doesn't get any hot feet or cold feet and put the title on Batista or back on Randy Orton or even on Triple H or something like that, and let this movement ride out until we can get a really good, solid, legitimate feud at you, like a Brock Lesnar, or you know, maybe someone from the Shield around SummerSlam or something like that, or who knows, even maybe returning CM Punk.
Yeah, I think I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. I think with Bryan, it's going to be an interesting mix of people to face. We might even go back to olden times of when Shawn Michaels was champion and they threw monster after monster at him for the championship. And he kept overcoming until he ran into Sid and lost Sid and then won it back from Sid and then lost his smile and then I think came back and won it again and then DX was formed and blah, blah, blah. But with Bryan, it's going to be tough simply because it's not that he can't work with people or work with certain people. It's that he's got to make them believe that he can beat these guys. And that's why I think they're going to test the waters first with maybe a feud with Batista. Or, I mean, they've already had the feud with Triple H. Although it does look like for, like, Extreme Rules, it looks like it might be an Evolution versus Shield match. Maybe they do a 4-on-4 and add Kane and add Daniel Bryan onto the other side. It's going to be the authority throwing people at Daniel Bryan for the next couple months. I don't think we're going to get an organic, normal feud that we're used to. We're going to have to go through, like I said, we're going to have to go through them as the authority throwing people at Bryan and trying to get the belt off of him. For his sake, dear God, I hope they condense down to one belt. I know I've been reading comments over the past couple days of how much he wanted to do the Yes Chant at WrestleMania and after wrestling two matches and having his shoulder worked on the entire time, lifting those two belts up over and over and over again was just killing him. So I really hope they transition to either their new WWE title that they have right now or they develop a new one with the new logo on it. If you haven't seen it or if you don't know, the WWE is slowly but surely moving their logo to the WWE Network logo. And by moving their logo, I mean they're changing the Scratch logo into a their permanent logo. It was one that it started showing up on the NXT title first. Their side plates have the WWE Network logo on them. So it's only a matter of time, I think, before we see a real new belt. It might not be a full new belt, but maybe a new main plate for it with the new logo on it. I hope Ryan's the one that gets to debut it and carry it. You never know. It could very well, they could very well hold off until it's someone that is a heel that the authority wanted, and they give him the title or whatever it is, or they have some funky thing going on where they have to unify the belts again or whatever it is. But I hope that doesn't happen. But one way or another, I think I think Daniel Bryan is going to be the champion for a while, and it's off to a good start. Like you said, he hasn't really lost much steam from from just winning. Like, he's not chasing the championship anymore, so you got to keep people interested, and that's hard to do. Especially when your whole thing is that you're the underdog. And now if you're at the top of the heap, you have to continue to be the underdog. It's going to be interesting. I don't know what to think about it yet, and I'm curious to see where it goes. I know Extreme Rules is coming up quick, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do that four-on-four, eight-man tag match, and not have Bryan defend the title at his first pay-per-view, but we'll have to see. Is there anything else either one of you wanted to talk about, whether it be Raw or WrestleMania, before we sign off? Because obviously we are far past our normal two-hour time. Justin?
Just running through my head real quick, I can't think of anything, just that hopefully they continue to, build on those future stars that we've seen, that we've gotten some promise of on Raw, keep them going forward, and I think that's pretty much it as far as that goes. I think we covered a lot of stuff tonight and pretty much touched on everything.
Yeah, and Cam?
No, you said he has a pretty solid show. I think we went around and got everything covered and get tonight.
Well, that will wrap up our show tonight. As always, we are the HTC Inside Pulse, or HTC wrestling.com/InsidePulseWrestlingPulseCast. I'm going to sign off tonight again with the Warrior tribute track that I opened the show with. I think it's fitting enough that we can open and close on that. And just say to wrestling fans out there, it's going to be an interesting year, and as much as a roller coaster of a ride that we had this past week, the world keeps turning and life keeps going on. And we'll never forget this weekend, and we'll never forget Judgment Warrior. It was sad to lose somebody that a lot of people have known their whole lives. I just watching them on television. Just happy that he was able to make amends or reestablish relationships or repair relationships or even just get in touch with people he hadn't seen in a long time. And as Justin said before, if there was any way to go out, he definitely went out with a bang and not a whimper. That being said, for Justin Sawalka and Cam Daugherty, I'm Matt Herrick, and we will talk to you guys next Thursday.
Can as the ultimate warrior accept no less, give no less to the warriors. You ravishing Rick Rude will feel that pain, feel that power at SummerSlam as the warriors claw and scratch all over the back of the ultimate warrior and tell me to do what is rightfully right and wrongfully wrong. Take the Intercontinental belt back. Take it back to parts unknown. Load the spaceship with the rocket fuel. Load it with the word. Because after SummerSlam, the belt will be mine. All the money in the world can't buy what it takes to be a champion. Dollars do not buy desire. So that the power of the ultimate warrior.